Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 250 for January 6th, 2020. So this is the first one of the year as well. So we are recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern time. My name is David Kosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com. And today we will be discussing the 328th weekly report. So if you haven't had a chance to take a look at this yet, I just posted a link in the chat, or you can go to timingresearch.com/reports to get access to either the web or PDF version. Just a reminder, you can also listen to all episodes as audio only podcast version. Just search for Timing Research on your favorite podcast network or directory and subscribe there. Today I have Neil Batho and Jim Kenny here for this episode, and Jim will be moderating, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, great. Thank you, David, and welcome everybody to the first broadcast of the year. Neil is with us here today, and while many of you are familiar with Neil's work and Neil himself, if you could just give a quick background on yourself, Neil, and what you guys are doing down there, and anything you'd like to add in the beginning here.
Yeah, sure, Jim. I was a broker way back at hard to even say it now, but 20 years ago, 98, 99, and I still remember people saying, hey, what are you going to do for the millennium? You know, what are you going to do? Now I think, I hear David say 2020, I think, oh my God. I had a great time. I loved it there because they eat you really well when the final company come in, get you to push their funds. I quit that after a year because it's just a sales job. You can't possibly manage the money effectively for people, especially when it's time to get out. They kind of teach you to just hold forever, which is okay because they'll still tell you to hold at the very, very bottom, and that's unfortunate. A lot of people get out. But I've been writing my newsletter for quite some time now. I use a lot of the things I learned as a broker, point figure charting, and I also added the Ichimoku Cloud a few years ago to sort of finely tune the entry and exit points. And so I send out a portfolio to my clients.
All right, perfect. We're going to go over a lot of different information here today, but the first thing we're going to do is what we always do, which is ask you what you think the S&P will do from today's opening to Friday's close. And just to give you a reference point, which I'm sure you already know, but for listeners here, the reference point for the opening here today was 3217. So it did open lower. And as we're speaking, it has risen off of that price. But from the 3217, how do you feel we're going to trade here this week, Neil?
Well, I mean, obviously everybody knows what happened a few days ago. So it's very difficult to go very bullish or very bearish. I'm pretty much just going to go neutral for the week, to be honest.
Yeah. No big side this week.
Well, if you were to say the market, that's mainly, you know, equities. But
yeah, I mean, just on the S&P 500, yeah.
So I'm going to say commodities up. I mean, one of our holdings is a cotton ETF. So I think that's going to be up this week just because of the cotton market.
Yeah.
So,
and a little later in the broadcast, we're going to go around the horn on some of the things that you're keeping an eye on specifically. But these are generic questions for people that are interested in the S&P 500.
Yeah, I'm just going to go 50-50. You're not going to miss out big. But don't count out a rally. Talk to an Abby rally this week.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they've rallied off of the low here, and it's still in a bit of a quandary because some of the things like the transports and the Russell, they've taken out the late December lows, and the VIX has taken out the late December highs, yet the NASDAQ and the S&P so far have not taken out those areas. And today's low, 17, 15 area, that's pretty much the lows of late December. So I think if those broke, you know, then maybe somebody would say that they're getting some evidence that a rollover is going on.
Did you get that from the Stock Traders Almanac?
No, I just was looking at the chart. I was just looking at the chart because, you know, my feeling has been the short interest collapsed during this run-up we saw, which would let one to think maybe some of this panic buying was involved in short covering. And those who know anything about short covering, once people have covered all their shorts, you need to find people who are now willing to buy the elevated prices. And if you can't, it can fall under its own weight. And I'm wondering if it'll fall under its own weight here before now and the end of the week.
Yeah, I'm loving your analysis about the short covering. I haven't looked at too many the short ratio in the S&P 500 or the
If you look at SPY and you look at where the short ratio was, 2 months ago, and then what it ended up at the end of the year, you'll see a line that is collapsing down to the lowest level since October of 2018.
Yeah, we need to get an intern on the show.
You know, because like I say, I mean, like you say, the market does look like it has tremendous legs still. I mean, it just was getting hit and And of course, we've had some very big geopolitical, but we have not seen this ability to keep this market down for any length of time so far.
I mean, I'll never forget. I mean, I graduated university in 98. And I remember in the 90s, you know, me and a friend of mine, we hated America Online. But I said, man, if I had money, I would sure love to buy that stock. But I have no money because I'm a student, you know, and the market was going up like crazy. And there was basically no war in the late 90s. The dollar was super strong. So I saw all these things together. And then I saw how things happened over the next 20 years. And so, you know, I'll never forget Greenspan's irrational exuberance comment. I had to look it up. It was in 1996, I think December 1996, the first time he used it. And it took 3 years and a month or so until the market peaked. Yeah. So I'm looking at the market now, and I've never, ever in the last 20 years seen a rally like I have in the last 2 months, ever.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the short interest chart, you'll see, you'll get an idea where some of the buying came from. Because clearly, as this thing was going up, anybody who was short was just blown out of the woods.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember also when I was a broker, 98, 99, that's right at the sort of the crescendo of everything. And we were following a guy called Harry Dent. Harry Dent. And he wrote a book in the early 2000s. What was it called? I think it was called The Boom Ahead. And he was spot on accurate in 1990. He said, by 2000, we're going to have Dow 10,000. Right. But then he wrote another book called Dow, The Roaring 2000. And he was completely wrong.
He does a lot of demographic work, doesn't he?
Yeah, demographic. But one of the things I really remember was he said, we have discovered a new Dow channel. And so you typically have the chart goes, you know, from the lower left to the upper right at maybe, let's say, a 30 degree angle. Okay.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the Dow takes off. And so now it's going at like a 50 degree angle. And he says, well, this is the new channel. And so now we have this new objective of something like Dow 40,000 by 2010, something like that. But then now, of course, that didn't happen. And then stocks completely crashed. But now I look at the chart and I say, you know what? This looks like that new Dow channel from 1999 that Harry Dent was talking about. And I mean, you could have an 89 degree chart and it's obviously not going to hold. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, a lot of it probably will have to do with valuations. I mean, if they keep, if rates ever drop down to where Europe was, which is zero, obviously it's a valuation bonanza for stocks because obviously you're comparing it to a zero or negative interest rate. So if we were going to get to those levels and earnings, which this year did nothing, didn't come through, then you could just see a valuation bubble. And that would surprise people because, you know, most times if you don't have earnings and revenues, stocks can't continue up very long. But if you had a valuation curveball because they drop rates so far, you know, that could be the curveball that people aren't anticipating.
There's so many things that happen compared to the past, because when you have these huge crescendos of a bull market, people will start talking about new paradigm.
Yeah.
And I would love to just have a Google search alert thing of paradigm, the word paradigm, and hard, you know, and you'll see it making these double top, and then I'll say, okay, keep buying. Another double top breakout. Keep buying the word paradigm, you know, and then maybe that will decrease a little bit, and I'll say, that's it, get out. And I swear to God, it'll work. I can only find it out of chart.
Now, we are in the election year 2020, and we can go back to 2016, and we can go back to 2012 and 2008, and, you know, 04 and 2000, just to look back 20 years or so. And a lot of times, you have some pretty good-sized volatility right around the election time, plus or minus a year. Do you think, plus or minus, this 2020 is going to be some very significant activity?
I'm glad you asked, because just last week, my new Stock Traders Almanac book showed up. And anyone who's listening to the show, I super highly recommend you order one. It costs $50 online. It's done by Jeffrey Hirsch, and his father started it in the 50s. And I had actually read some things about election cycles that I didn't know. And some of these things are just so spot-on accurate. It's unbelievable. I actually bought it 10 years ago. I hadn't bought it since, but I just love it. And I'll tell you what he says about election cycles. When it's a president's first, if it's the president, a new president's first term, and it's the third year, that is the best of all election cycles. And that's exactly what we had last year,
right,
with 30% on the S&P 500. The next best is when the incumbent is running for re-election, which we have, and it's actually the fourth year of the presidency, which averages 10%. And the third year, which was last year, averages something like 18% in the S&P 500. And I think it was something, like you had mentioned, that it's actually a fairly volatile year in the fourth year. But when the incumbent is running again, it's better. And they didn't say Democrat or Republican. They said if the incumbent is running again.
Yeah.
Then it was interesting what you said about the December lows, because there was also something in the almanac about if the lows of January breach the lows of December, you can get as much as a 10% decline in the market. But the year still ends up on a positive note.
And if I was throwing a crystal ball out there, I think that's something that I'd keep an eye on, because if we do start taking out 3,200 on the S&P, a 10% correction would still only take you into the 28, 2900 area. And that's pretty much where the 200-day moving averages are and other things like that. So
yeah, it's nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course,
I'm expecting a crash sometime between now and March.
Yeah. Because these earnings, you know, if they come in light and the guidance is not that strong and profit margins are tight, you know, people are going to start looking around. And of course, if this was really a short covering rally squeeze, which there's some evidence that that could be, that's a recipe for a correction. And that would allow people who want to get bullish to maybe get a better entry point.
I think so.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, we are going to ask you your confidence level, but because you're playing Switzerland today, meaning you're neutral, your confidence level is probably pretty high on neutral right now.
I'm actually part Swiss too, so there you go.
Yeah, there you go. So let's turn towards some of the things that you're looking at as far as the technical indicators, and when you're looking at a market, is there any group of things that you like to look at, be it moving averages, stochastics, MACD, whatever the heck they are?
For the overall technicals, I use something called the bullish percent index.
Okay.
If you go to stockchart.com, type in the word bullish, it will measure the percent of stock in an index that are on near-term buy signals. So S&P 500 somewhere around 76% a couple days ago.
Right.
And in the last 10 years or maybe ever, it's never more than 90, because there's always going to be some weak stocks in there. So as it starts creeping up, how many stocks are contributing to the bull market?
Right.
Towards the end, it's the weaker and weaker stocks, you know, that are getting picked up. Right. I mean, Apple's been on a buy signal, you know, for months.
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
but now people may take a stab at Pfizer or something like that.
Exactly. Something like that. So as that starts going up, then once it reverses 6%, I almost just get out, at least for a while.
Okay.
And so that's something you can look at. If it's in X's, you're in. If it's an O's, raise your stops is the best I could say. And you can't. And if this thing's in X's and you just stay in while it's in X's, you will never get out too early, ever. Because, you know, I mean, you're not going to miss these huge rallies, because you just look at it and you say, hey, bullish percent is still in X's. I can't believe this happening. And you just hold, you know.
Right.
But
you're
waiting
for the market to tell you that things have changed. You're not trying to be a predictor as much.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to time the exact top.
Yeah. And following the flow of money is very important when you're investing.
Yeah, and a lot of another sign for a top is a buyout. A lot of people say mergers and acquisitions are great and everything, but I think to myself, well, if you're using your stock to buy another company, why would you do it now if you think your stock's going to go up? And I've seen it many times when there's a buyout that's really near a top. So I haven't seen many buyouts lately.
No. With regards to other ones like the candlesticks or anything else like that, or the cloud?
Yeah, I use the Ichimoku cloud. And a good way to determine when something might move the other way is when the cloud will get really, really thick as it expands outward. That's a sign that there could be a turn soon. But what you can do if you just want to hold as a trend trader is if the daily chart is above the cloud and above the moving averages, I hold. But I'll also look for an Elliott wave formation. I don't trade specifically an Elliott wave, but if I see three very obvious moves to the upside with a pullback in between, I'm thinking to myself, okay, we're on the third move. This is the last move. It took these last people forever to get in. It's got to be the top, at least for now.
Yeah, at least a temporary peak.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the key questions here today that we were also going to go over is platform. People like to, you know, there's so many choices out there nowadays.
Yeah.
What trading platforms and brokers do you see as more favorable for what you're doing anyway, or that people could investigate?
Well, you don't have to use an all-in-one platform, but almost anyone who's serious uses Interactive Brokers, you know, and they have something like 75% of the entire option volume in the industry. It's just
now on their commercial, they say something about Elite, and then they say something about some other type of. Do you have any quick explanation on what they're referring to? Where they have the kid walking down saying, "I don't want my orders being traded out" or whatever.
I don't know. No.
Yeah.
But
they say they have an Elite platform, and then they have some other kind of platform, and you can switch back and forth. I don't know what that means.
Well, I think when did Charles Dow? Well, first you had Robinhood that got rid of all of them, then I think Schwab did it, and so now everyone's done it.
Right.
Amazingly, all these other countries out there are still charging commission, and it's hard for foreigners to open up a U.S. Account with a U.S. address. But beside that, I'm not exactly sure. I just know that they're very cheap. They've always been the cheapest.
Yeah, they always have been the cheapest.
So, but for charting, there's another good one called TradingView.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like why my website, but it's a trading, TRADING, and then view.com. And it's all free, but they only give you the daily, weekly, monthly on the free version. They got an app as well. And if you pay, then you can get down to the minute, 5 minute, 15 minute, you know, whatever you want, different windows, et cetera. But sometimes that just gets you into trouble. If you trade just on the daily, you're probably going to be okay. So,
yeah. You know, hey, once you get into the 5 minute graphs, you're pretty much jumping around like a jumping beam.
Yeah, but it's okay if you want to look for a good entry point.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of people do different time frames. They'll do a 15-minute, 30-minute daily, you know, and move it up that way, you know.
Yeah, and if you're looking at something to buy on, like, let's say something is trading below the Ichimoku cloud, and you say, okay, well, as soon as it goes above the cloud, I want to be alerted. You can put in something for that, and it will alert you. So it will, you know, smartly monitor it. So it's not just based on price, it's based on the technicals. So you could put in an alert, and it could trigger literally a year later, and you'll say, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Okay, well, cool. So,
turning towards some of the different stocks out there right now, Neil, is there any stocks that are jumping out to you as possibly an opportunity one way or the other? I mean, this Apple is up at 300, went down to 292 and changed today, bounced back up. It's got moving averages well underneath the current price. You know, 219 is the 200-day, and we're up here at 300. So is this a deal where it's just a rocket ship going to a target price at 325 or 350, which a lot of people have as a target price, or is it a situation where it may also see a relief?
I just don't follow Apple that much.
I get
$1.2 trillion.
It's too big. You're looking for more special situations than that.
You know, yeah. I mean, I just I hear stories from a lot of people. I wish I bought Apple in, you know, the crash 10 years ago, and I tell them Apple. Say, I wish I bought Pier One Imports at 19 cents, and it went to 45.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I wish I bought Croc at 30 cents, and it went 20. I mean, it doesn't matter how you make the money, but God, I just kicking myself big time about Pier One Imports. I remember, you know, the dollar was going down. That bad for Pier One Imports. It went down for so many years, and then the crash came, and I looked at it. And I said, Pier One Imports at 19 cents. Surely it would go bankrupt. And then I forgot about it. And by the time I looked again, I think it was something like $10. And I thought, oh my God, you know. So that was a classic. So you don't have to get fall in love with it. But what am I looking at? I've actually been loading up on commodities the last couple of weeks.
Oh yeah, yeah. The commodities certainly have come into favor this year. And I noticed that you know, Bloomberg is coming out with some kind of an index, and Vanguard came out with a commodity type fund. And so it seems to me like the big boys are kind of indicating an interest in an area where they have not had one before, so much anyway.
Yeah, you know, I traded a lot of commodities. I remember 2003, 2004, 2005, that was every day was gold and oil, you know. And I told my clients, get into the Rogers commodity index. Jim Rogers had his own. I think it might be shut down now, but you know, I've been watching some of these agricultural indexes for 10 years and never bought them one. And then I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, you know what, maybe now is time. People just, I mean, you tell someone, like, people say, hey, you know, maybe we should get into applied materials. I think I'm going to go with cotton.
Yeah. Is there a proxy for cotton on the New York Stock Exchange, or do you have to trade a futures contract?
No, there's an ETF, BAL.
DAL?
BAL. Like
BAL. And that's the one that they use for cotton?
Yeah.
I got you. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that at all. And yeah, that's a Bloomberg cotton sub-index or something like that.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't know how it works.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, basically, you know, I see from the chart, it used to be at 48 in the last year, went all the way down to 34 and change. Now it's trading at 41 and change. So it has turned around a little bit here. Obviously, the prices.
I think there's also some opportunity in oil stock, mainly because no one really has the gut to buy them.
Right.
So we've been in Exxon for almost a month. The reason was because about a month ago, I was thinking to myself, oh my God, what happened to oil stocks? I haven't traded them in forever. And then I thought, wait a second, what's the yield on Exxon these days? It's an astounding 5%. And I mean, who wants want to make 5% a year, that's nothing, right? But then I look up Exxon dividend growth rate, and in the last 10 years, Exxon has doubled its dividend. So what that means is, let's say they do the same thing again. I don't know if they will, right? But let's say they do. Let's say you put $100,000 into Exxon, you're going to make $5,000 a year,
right?
But if they double that dividend, that means 10 years from now, you're going to make $10,000 a year, right? If they double it again, 20 years from now, you're going to make $20,000 a year, right? Based on your initial investment, you know, so there's definitely some opportunity there.
You know, also in the debt market, there's a lot of people who are chattering about that the discounted debt in the oil servicing sector, has been a situation where people are looking as well. The bulls say, you know, that obviously you're getting great yields down there, and these companies, because of oil, are bouncing back a little bit. And the bears are saying that there's no free cash flow in the oil industry, meaning they need higher prices in order to make money because their companies aren't generating free cash flow. So right now, though, it does seem like the money flow has been coming into some of the income things like Allerion, Master Limited Partnerships. And there has been some money flow coming into those areas, and definitely in the last 2 months. Whether they're right or wrong, only time will tell. But they do have higher yields in many cases than others. But that's another sidebar on the oil industry is the debt. With regards to crude, you know, we did go up pretty good here in the last few days. Do you see this as something that'll follow through, or are you thinking that on a short-term basis we may have tapped out a little bit? We went to about 64.72 today, and now we're in the 63s.
Yeah, my target a few weeks ago was 65, intermediate-term target. But regardless of what's happening in the Middle East, I think oil could hit around 80 by summer, just because for the simple reason that oil has not been affected by all the inflation over the last 10 years. You know, so if you look at the price from 10 years ago when it hit, I think it hit an astounding 145, but I might be mistaken. Do you remember, or was it 120?
It was around 140, I thought.
Yeah, just for a little bit, and then it crashed down to 40, right?
Yeah.
It actually
crashed down to like 25.
Did it?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, that can be, I've been talking to people for the last year about this Aramco deal coming to market. I thought that using common sense as your guide, the Saudis would like to have a strong, firm oil market in order to sell $2 trillion worth of stock in this thing. You know what I mean? And if we went back to 40 or 45 on crude, they might not be able to sell it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, or maybe they just needed the money, you know, just not to help.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I don't think it's coincidental that they came out with this thing and all of a sudden oil's having this big bounce, you know what I mean?
Because,
if you were trying to sell stock in anything, you wouldn't want bad news to be out permeating the air when you're trying to get people to invest in something, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, they should have gone public 10 years ago. They would have made a lot more money.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm sure. Yeah, I think they're not selling the entire company. I think it's a piecemeal deal. So maybe over time, they'll probably fade into this thing. And then if we go electric, you know, I went down to one of the hotels here in town, and they had a certain amount of space only for electric cars.
Right.
And it got me thinking, you know, the electric car thing is definitely coming. But I looked at the parking lot in total, and it was, you know, 7 or 8 spots for electric and 9 million for the others, you know what I mean?
Sure, yeah. So, yeah, oil's still increasing in demand on a global basis by 1.5% a year.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to dig up that lithium somehow, you know?
Mm-hmm. With regards to the agricultural sector, you know, you got your deal going, I guess. You got your deal going. Nothing's on writing with China. And that has put a bit underneath the soybean complex, particularly bean oil and beans. But some people are saying that other grains like wheat might come into play because of that pork crisis they have over there, that sometimes the money might be directed towards wheat. Any ideas on what you're thinking about the grains?
Well, Jim, I've got 90% of all my money in pork belly.
Oh, you do?
Leveraged it 40 times. So,
so you are, because, well, you know, there was a swine flu. What? For people who aren't familiar, a quick background on what's going on with the pork over there?
I don't know. The last few months, I've been actually tracking lean hogs, which I never tracked before, and I just always keeps reminding me of Dan Aykroyd and his pork belly.
Yeah, yeah.
Had a bit of a kick out of it, but I don't know about lean hogs. I'm not long lean hog, but they certainly made a move, and I don't really know why. Do you know why?
Well, I mean, no. The only thing I know, what there was some type of, disease in their pork. And of course, that is a very big thing over there with regards to their diets. And so it caused a lot of inflation on the price of pork, I understood. And I thought that that may have an effect on the agricultural purchase. I had read that somewhere, whether it's going to be true or not, I'm not 100%, but it was an interesting sidebar on it. Yeah. But yeah, on the grains themselves, are you seeing any particular one, corn, wheat, soybean complex, anything interesting there?
We're long wheat, but we're down a little bit in the breakout, but we're still holding on wheat at the moment. But I'm not doing corn or soybeans because I can't have, you know, too much in all of this. But there's also a...
Yeah, you're talking about as a percentage diversification of the portfolio.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big diversifier, but I mean, I'm not going to put all my money in that now.
No.
You know, we still have other.
Yeah. Now, obviously, the metals had the big day here today, but then it seemed to back off quite a bit. Any feelings on this gold? I think we jumped almost to 1600 on the morning or overnight session. Yeah. But, you know, it's been kind of volatile back and forth. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, gold, the move started before anything happened in the Middle East, but, you know, and then it just, you know, made the move go higher. But, I mean, my target for gold is possibly 2000 by summer. You know, I haven't been bullish, you know, for the long term in gold in about 9 years.
Yeah.
A big balance rate at many times, which worked out great. But, you know, if I look at one of the things that really triggered it, and my hypothesis of gold prices isn't just deficit or how big they are, it's the deficit growth rate.
Okay.
So if you see the deficit getting bigger, like let's say, oh, we expect the deficit to be $1 trillion, but it's actually $1.1 trillion, $1.2 trillion. That's when gold's going to move because, oh my God, is it going to go 1.2? What's the next year going to be? 1.4?
Yeah.
You know, and that really triggered it back in the early 2000s. And recently I saw that the deficit was just for the month was 12% higher than expected. And that was almost right spot on the day that gold moved. So when I saw that, I thought, okay, this is the catalyst I need, you know, and you know, the market's at full employment and, you know, the government needs all the money it can get and still can't balance the budget. I'm thinking that's it. I'm thinking gold 2000. So you haven't missed out.
And the Fed also has indicated a willingness to provide liquidity with about a $400 billion add to their balance sheet in the last few months, which is a very big spike up in liquidity.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, they did a 40% tax cut for corporations, and most of that went to just buying the stock back. And basically, you know, that's revenue lost to the government. And if your expenditures continue going through the roof, they just passed a spending bill of about $1.4 trillion, didn't they? At the end
hard
of the
to
year.
Keep up with everything. Yeah, oh yeah, there was a new budget.
Yeah. So you got spending pretty much, you know, going nuts. And then you've got the revenues probably, you know, coming in from a 40% tax cut. So you don't have to be a CPA to figure out the math doesn't work, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know that the U.S. had the highest corporate tax rate, I think, entire world. So you got all these big companies like Apple, et cetera, having these weird offshore shells in Ireland that own something else, another shell, and then, you know, they're sitting on billions of dollars cash and I can't bring it on shore and all this stuff. So I mean, I'm hoping it's going to work out that the money comes back on shore, but, you know, so that the corporations, I mean, if you tax them too much, they're just going to leave, whether it's physically leaving or using shell companies, you know. So
have you been following Bitcoin at all in relation to the gold? Does it seem like Bitcoin is catching a big bid, or have people gone back to the more traditional buy gold if you think the currency or the economy or the debt is going to go a little nutty?
Well, you're always going to have, right now you have guys that think cryptos will take over the world. But I think that interest is fading and, you know, you're not going to get as big a bounce as you think. That's what I think for now anyways. I would stick with the traditional types of trade like gold. I mean, I did see a bounce on it, but yeah, you know, I think the bounces may get less and less.
Supposedly central banks have been buying the heck out of the gold too. Have you followed that at all?
No, I didn't. I know that China owns a ton of gold, and I know that they're buying gold.
Yeah. So the active there. How about on the white metal, the silver? Cheap man's catch-up trade, or not going to really have the legs of the gold?
No, it always follows gold. Sometimes it lags by quite a bit. You know, but I think you could easily have a move silver up to maybe even 30 by summer. It's 18 the last I checked.
Yeah, I think the last time we went up towards around 20, and that was last summer.
Yeah, I remember when silver hit 50. It's a classic story. I went out for a walk with someone and we started talking and he asked what I did and I told him and he said, what do you think about silver? Wow. And I thought to myself, oh boy, you know, this is a guy I don't even think he trades and he knows. And I thought, that's it. And I wrote all my members and I said, get out. I'm not kidding. I really did. And then about a week or two later, I was at an event and same type of thing happened and silver had already gone down, you know, forward. And this guy was telling me, oh no, silver, man, silver's the way to go. And I'm thinking to myself, you look at a little silver coin.
you think that's going to be worth more than $50? Seriously, you know? And he said, no, silver's got, you know, they use it in technology and it has all sorts of uses. I'm really bullish on silver. And I thought to myself, no. And then he started getting really upset at me. And I thought to myself, well, now I know I'm right. I got out. Someone's going to be that adamant about something on a 20% pullback. I thought, you know, dude, this trade's been going on for about 10 years. I think you're kind of late.
Right, so, right. You know, one of the big things this year is supposed to be that U.S. dollar. It topped out around 99.50 back in the end of September, beginning of October. And since then, we've had some deterioration. The first move down was big, quick, down towards 97, snap back to 98.50.
Yeah.
And now we've taken out that 97 and we're trading at 96.63. You think this thing might accelerate to the downside and take out 95? Or do you think this is a little bit of a bear trap, I think?
Downside, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just because of escalations in the Middle East, that could increase the risk for deficit. Deficits weaken currencies.
Right.
And just the anticipation of a further deficit is going to weaken currencies. I mean, people say currencies go down because of war. It's not the war. It's the deficit that the war caused, right? You know what I mean? So the dollar will go down in advance. And I mean, it's a bummer because the dollar is so strong. I love having a strong dollar.
Yeah.
But I think the pound, you could just switch to the pound.
Yeah.
You know? Because basically it's like you're pulling out a big answer from that Brexit. And finally, you know, the UK can get down to business again, right? People will invest and they'll say, okay, finally it's over. Oh, now I'm going to buy the recovery, you know?
And this is a currency that used to be well above two in its history. And to see it down at 120 or something seemed to be a little bit of an overkill. But, you know, they had nothing but, quagmire over there. And people don't like to hold on to, something that looks like nobody's driving the bus. You know what I mean? They get a little nervous if they're passengers on a bus that has no driver. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. You need a download from Elon Musk in the bus.
And the administration, you know, they seem to be very friendly on having the dollar do a big fade to help international trade, because I think 40% of the S&P company profits come from overseas. So they want that to happen. And then the Fed wants inflation to come back. And both of those things sound awfully friendly to gold. And that's why during the drop, you know, that 1450 support zone looked like a heck of a time to come back into the game after it sold off from 1580.
Yeah, I don't like the dollar. I was looking at just before the show and the last few weeks, I was thinking, oh, I really hope this doesn't go down, you know, but it looks like it probably will. And
It's a slippery slope. Yeah, it's a slippery slope. It hasn't taken out the trading range support around 95, but it definitely is slip sliding towards that number, it seems like.
Yeah, and I know Trump wants a lower dollar, and I think it was just a few weeks before he took the White House, he mentioned something in a few tweets, and right away, basically, the dollar went down for several months, you know. Then he talked about it again, but it just wouldn't budge, but now he might finally be getting what he wants. Sort of.
You know, as far as the interest rate picture is concerned, this TLT is something that I kind of watch to get an idea of what's going on with the interest rates. And, it peaked out at about 149 last year. And then it came down and it went back up. It didn't take out 149. Then came down and made a new low down toward 135. Then it bounced up. And now it's in the 138 area. Do you think interest rates, this year on the 10-year note, say we're trading at 175, do you see a big move up or down there? And which way?
Yeah, we talked about this before. And I think that the big move for bonds was last year. I mean, they had that massive bond rally and we traded it with options a couple of times. It worked out off for us. And even on some ETFs, leverage ETFs. But now it's just sort of in no man land, I think, bonds. It's just people would rather be in the market. The market went up so much, that put pressure on bonds. If the market, starts to sell off dramatically, you could get a move in bonds for a month or two. But I just don't see it unless there's a clear indication of interest rates. And, if interest rates just keep going down, I mean, let's say for some strange reason, the Fed loses their mind and just starts cutting rates and say they're going to cut rate more than get, a new big bull market. But I'm just avoiding them completely right now.
Yeah, they're trying to extend the cycle, obviously. But you would think they would be old enough to know that when you extend a cycle that is this long in the tooth, that at some point you're only creating a bigger problem down the road,
Yeah. I mean, the more inflation, the poorer everyone gets, in the long run, right? You got, one income, a big house. Now you got two incomes and a house half the size, right? They call that progress.
With regards to a handful of the stocks that you're kind of keeping an eye on, do you have a few that you can share?
Yeah, I got some commodity picks. DBZ is mostly oil and gold is my thing. I got DBA, which is agriculture, and we like that. And I'm looking at cybersecurity now as well, but I have not bought it yet. So I'm probably just going to hold that for my subscribers.
Are you monitoring any of these defense stocks? Because one of the other guys who comes on quite a bit, Wiz Buckley, he was very keen on these last year. And I've noticed that, you know, stocks like Raytheon have had a pretty good run. They're down a little bit today, but they certainly have had a pretty good run. You following any defense contractors?
You know, I haven't in a while just because there's been other things to buy. But, you know, I'm aware, you know, whenever something like this happens, people go into Raytheon, they go into Lockheed Martin and some other stocks like that. So definitely will be worthwhile to look at the charts. It's such a sketchy week that I don't know if I'm going to want to get into that right away. It just seems like it's just too obvious and easy.
Yeah. Well, it has been. I mean, if you bought it, you know, last month or the month before in anticipation that, you know, some of these things could unfold a little bit, you certainly made a hit on your last couple of months' equity with some of these defense contractors.
Yeah. Yeah. I looked up L3 Communications, but I guess I got bought out a while ago. But they're not around anymore. Do you know who bought them out?
Not 100%. No.
Yeah. That was a big one. I remember from back in the day. But yeah, Lockheed Martin and Raytheon, I think those are the big ones. Boeing is also one, but it doesn't have as much of a business in defense.
You know, the end of last year, the biotechs were going kind of nutty, and also the medical equipment, you know, therapeutics were going kind of nutty. Did you have anything in there that you've been looking at?
I just have, you know, a report when people sign up for my free newsletter.
Yeah.
Tell them that best fundamental pick I know of all time is IHI, which is medical devices ETF. And it's just been doing consistently well, you know, year over year. And the medical industry is supposed to grow twice as much as the economy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how, you know, I don't want to say how can you lose, but it sounds pretty good to me, you know.
Yeah.
And so this has some interesting talk in it, like Intuitive Surgical and a lot of other ones. I mean, they do have high valuation. But,
yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. You know, you're jumping on a train that the valuations are huge. And it's a come line betting, meaning you're betting on the future to support whatever the heck you're paying for.
Yeah.
Which can work out great, and that's where a lot of gains have. But of course, you wake up one day, and if the reality hits it, you know, you can get a big drop in them as well.
Yeah, the train left the station a long time ago, but the journey is long.
Exactly.
And you know, it left New York, but we're only Detroit. We're going all the way to Jefferson.
I mean, we've seen it time and time again, and this Tesla is the poster child for that, because every time it goes down and it's left for dead, it comes roaring back. And I think, obviously, short interest is a big factor because, you know, with the short interest, I think it was 20-30% of the stock or more at one point. Now it's much lower. But, you know, today alone, it's not too far from its all-time high of 454. It's trading at 445. And, you know, people left this thing for dead at 150 back in last June. And this
I see more and more Teslas. I mean, I can't imagine shorting stocks.
Yeah, I see more and more myself.
And
ordinary parking lots like at an ordinary grocery store. So, you know, it's not just the Beverly Hills crowd that are picking these things up. You know, it seems like they've gone, you know, much more mainstream.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you got an extra $1,000 a month lying around in a good credit score.
You're in.
I've done calculations, Abby. If you want to buy a car that's around, you know, $15,000-$20,000 versus, let's say, $40,000 for the Model 3, and then you put it out 10 years, how much are you going to save on gas? But not only that, what are you going to, if you buy a car at $15,000 in 10 years, it's going to be worth, what, $3,000? You're going to lose $12,000 there. If you get the Tesla, what's going to be worth in 10 years? You buy it at 40, probably going to worth now, probably literally only 15, I guess. But you're basically not going to have any repairs.
Yeah.
You know, there's no radiator, there's no muffler. There's so many things it just doesn't have. No alternator, no starter, you know, all these things.
Sounds like everything I've had to replace in my life.
Yeah, me too. I'm out. You know what I mean?
And then you have to go to somebody who you're believing everything they say because you have no idea how all these things work. General Motors and Ford, you know, they've been real dogs. You think it might be related to the fact that the world is going the Tesla way? And these guys are not going to have products, or they're going to lose market share to a greater degree.
I don't really haven't followed those stocks in a while, but I think they're just hopeless at innovating.
They're very dead. I mean, General Motors has been trading between 33 and 42, and it's right now at 35. You know,
why can't they make something cool? Like, remember the Saturn? That was for a while. well.
Yeah, yeah. The Saturn was very good for a while. That was kind of a feel-good car.
Yeah. Who made that? I don't remember. What do you
answer? I know. Saturn, I think, had their own company, and then they got bought out.
Okay.
These airlines got any future? I know they've been sold off. Like Southwest has gone from 58 down to 54 here, and obviously they're concerned about fuel costs. But every time you go to the airport, it seems like the planes are full and they're packed, you know?
Yeah, God, you know, I have not followed airlines. Now that you mentioned it, I wish I had. I remember looking a few months ago and I thought, oh my God, maybe I miss it even more. But
they're on the defensive here since the news hit, because obviously people are concerned that they're going to see a 70 or 80 handle that you were talking about if the oil started really accelerating to the upside. And then these guys may not be as hedged as they should be or something like that.
Yeah, oil can go up a bit. So probably that's going to put a cap on the airline stock.
Yeah.
And then I think we're going to get some sort of crash in the neck between now and the end of March. I don't know when, but it happens repeatedly in these types of scenarios. It happened in 2000, and what was it? Maybe 2001 also, or 2003, and then you get these March crashes. So I'm really hoping, you know, a March crash, April rally, May sell off, and then maybe somewhere around June or something, we get some awesome deals, and that's going to be when everyone starts giving up, but we will have handled it properly.
Yeah. One last thing here is on the international front. Is there anything either in Asia or in, I mean, you got Australia that should benefit from the turnaround in commodities, and Canada who should benefit from a turnaround in some of these commodities possibly. And you got Asia and Europe. You see things overseas, because a lot of people are pounding the emerging market drum and the European drum.
All I know about emerging markets is that when I was a broker and I looked at the holdings of emerging market ETFs, oh no, I'm sorry, this is international ETF.
Right.
International ETF where holdings were Coca-Cola, General Electric.
Because
they're international, right? I mean, what other stocks are international? They're all US stocks. I'm just not ready to go for these emerging markets at the moment. But I mean, if you short the dollar, a lot of the dollars turn again. Well, the euro is 55% of that index last time I checked.
Right.
But you got Canadian and the Aussie in there. And so if they benefit by the commodity and oil boom, then the dollar's going to weaken, you know, comparatively. But I think that might be a trade future to go short dollar, or you could do it. I'm not sure if there's an inverse dollar ETF. I know you got UUP, which is the regular one, but I'm going to start looking at put on the dollar. But if you have a futures contract, you know, you don't need the put, right?
Yeah. You know what might be interesting is in Europe, there's a ETF FEZ for proxy for Europe stocks 50. And I noticed it finally got above 40, which was kind of last year's highs for a while. In fact, January 2nd here, it made its 52-week high. And if you're a believer that Lagarde coming in is going to possibly get these people to do fiscal stimulus, and if you're a believer that Boris is going to turn around England and the UK, you know, it might not be a terrible thing to keep an eye on as well, because, you know, 35 seem to be the lows on this thing, 40 seem to be the high, and then they have been able to get above 40. We'll just check to see if it's sustainable. But, you know, the winds of change, if they do start blowing, I don't think those markets have advanced as much as US has.
Yeah, and Europe's never going to be that far behind the U.S., of course. But I think that it could be a good time sort of to switch over to Europe, to be honest. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that if you buy, you know, a German company or a company in Europe, or let's say a Swiss company, and those currencies go up, then when you exchange that, like you're going to buy, let's say you have a German company. So what would be a good example? Maybe Siemens.
Right.
So that would be in Euro, because their headquarters would be in the Euro, in a country that uses Euro. You buy it on the New York Stock Exchange. Well, let's say the euro goes up 10 to 20% against the dollar, right? That will be reflected in that stock price. And when you sell it, you're basically getting going back to US dollars. You will actually make that money in the currency. A lot of people don't know that.
So you're thinking it's a little bit of a currency play as well.
Yeah. This was huge back in the early 2000s. I mean, the US was going to war. And at the same time, we had a real, a guy in Canada who actually balanced a book. And he was like, he even canceled a bond issue because he said they didn't need the money. Oil's going through the roof. And I told everyone, if you're going to buy an oil stock, don't buy Exxon, buy Canadian oil stock. And you're going to make like 30% on the currency. And on Exxon, you're going to make nothing on the currency. And you got to go with the currency play. So Europe could be an awesome currency play.
Yeah. Also, you just mentioned the Canadian energy. I punched up Suncor, SU.
Yeah.
And I see it's gone from 27 to 34 and change in not that long of a time. So there seems to have been since the beginning as well, since August, there seems to be money flow going towards the Canadian oil company Suncor. So it'll be interesting to see if that can continue its trend.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we're gonna give you time, Neil, to go over a little bit a reintroduction to the people that, again, that aren't familiar with you, and also what you're doing down the company, and then what special offers or shall we say introductory offers you might have for the people.
Sure. So I send out a free newsletter a couple times a week, just on my overall view of where you should be in the world, you know, and what sector you're in, whether it's gold or tech or biotech or whatever it is really the most important thing. Not to be diversified. You don't need your hands in all sorts of baskets. You know, only your hand in a couple baskets, which are the best baskets. And, you know, for private members, I'll send out a portfolio of exactly what we're doing, where exactly and where I think we should be. And a lot of times we'll use ETFs, leverage ETF. And if it's time to short the market, we'll use inverse ETF, which you can use in an IRA as well, which is great. And if you want to sign up, you know, I'll give you a report that says, I actually gave it away already, didn't I? But the best ETF I think you should have for the next 10 years, which is IHI. But I write some good information in there also.
Okay. And did you tell everybody what email address or what way to contact you?
It's in the email that everyone got, traderreview.net.
Okay, traderreview.net is a way to get over there and get more information from Neil. And then again, any questions you have, you could also obviously communicate by email as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be perfect. Okay, thanks a lot for being here, Neil. Again, I'm Jim Kenny. If you have any questions on getting the weekly update that I provide, just simply email me at optionprofessor@gmail.com, and I'll be more than happy to keep you updated on my views and my observations. Right now, I'm going to flip it back over to David. And again, thanks, Neil, for being here. And of course, we'll see you some more throughout the year. And good luck and good trading.
Thanks, Jim. You too. See you on the next show.
All right. Thanks, guys. Lots of good info for the first CFN show of the year. So just a quick reminder to everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory to get instant updates on new episodes. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or the past archives of shows. And this one will be posted within about an hour. So I just want to thank my guests again for today, Neil Batho of TraderReview.net and Jim Kenny of OptionProfessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David.
David.